Good afternoon, and welcome to today's edition of Your Book Garden, a copyrighted show presented by Authors on the Air Global Radio Network. I'm Tina Sestetic, your host. This show is being pre-recorded from the Sheraton Hotel in downtown Denver during the Romance Writers of America convention. Today I'm pleased to have one of my fellow Soulmates Publishing authors, Steve Mitchell, writing as F.C. Mitchell, on my show. Steve and I have known each other for several years. In fact, we received our first contract on the same day and have watched and supported each other's writing careers. As a writer of paranormal and sci-fi romance, fantasy, and science fiction, Steve crafts unique and wondrous worlds where his characters explore, romp, and fall in love. Whether traveling through dark, demon-filled dimensions, the edge of wild space, or ancient mythological heavens, his heroes and heroines, guided by their adventurous hearts, discover hidden strengths on their pathways to enduring love. Hello, Steve.
Hello, Tina.
How are you doing today?
I'm feeling good. I probably stayed up a little bit too late last night. We had a little bit too much partying. But it's been a great convention, and glad we could carve out some time to be together.
We've been able to, and you know, us and a lot of the Wisconsin romance writers have spent a lot of time together, which has really been fun, because we only get to see each other like maybe once a year.
Right. So many of those connections we make are online, and even with our soulmates authors now, I've met a few that I hadn't ever met personally, but I know them so well from our online presence. It's just nice to have that connection, that real connection. And that's why these conferences, I think, are so important.
Mm-hmm. I haven't been going to a lot of the workshops, but, you know, just sitting down and talking with people, and I got to sit down and talk with Sarah and Cheryl, our editors, both our editors for Soulmate Publishing, and spend some time with them, and, you know, meet new people, and, yeah, it's been fun and exhausting.
Yeah.
Here at the Sheraton, they have the plaza, and then they have the tower. And some of the meetings are way over in the tower.
Well, and this meeting, I'm over here. Our room is over in the tower, which is where I was, which was why it took me so long to get over.
Oh, okay. Well, that's fine, because I was I forgot to turn my cell phone back on, and I didn't get his message. So, and as part of being Soulmate Tree, Steve and I have been in, I mean, Soulmate Publishing, Steve and I have been in My Sexy Valentine Anthology, and we are both part of the Soulmate Tree Collective.
Yes.
In fact, your book, From Venus to Mars, correct?
Yes.
Came out the day before Mars.
Between Venus and Mars.
Came out the month before mine.
Right. Yeah. I was number three and you were number four in that series.
Yeah. And the interesting thing, you know, and I did a show already with the Soulmate Tree Collective, but, you know, we were able to, you know, Soulmate Tree that connects, you know, people that need to be connected and fall in love, and we could write in any genre, and Steve wrote in his favorite genre. So
I wrote in sci-fi genre. I already have a universe that I've created called my Hearts in Orbit universe, which is kind of if you took Star Trek and mashed it with Love Boats, that's what you got. So
that's a good visual.
So it's kind of a fun universe to play around in. I've got two galaxies, actually, the Milky Way, and now we're opening up Andromeda as we move into the third book in that. There's three books in that series right now, and I'm planning a few more. So that series was a lot of fun. So I could just kind of take a lot of that world and drop the Soulmate Tree into it, and so that book, Between Venus and Mars, is actually part of two different series. It's part of the Soulmate Tree, but then it also characters from my Hearts in Orbit universe kind of tumble in there too. And as I write further, I can take my characters that I created in Between Venus and Mars and move them around, so people know what happens later on, you know, when at the end of the book, obviously, they have their happy ever after, but what happens in that happy ever after, you know, do they have babies, things like that. So, and it's always fun. I love reading series just from the aspect that you get to know the characters so well.
Mm-hmm.
And you kind of, you know, you don't have to re-know them every time. A lot of times my characters have, the main two characters who fall in love have already been introduced in the previous book if it's later on in the series. And so And I like, you know, a lot of other authors do that too. So you already know the characters jumping into a brand new book, and sometimes that makes it a lot more comfortable.
Yeah. The other thing about that I have found with series, and we have a fellow Wisconsin author, Beth M. James, and she's written a 3-book series. Well, I made the mistake of reading the first 2 books, and they were wonderful. And now it's like, oh, get the 3rd one done. I want it. And somebody else did the exact same thing, but I wish you'd get that book done. So, you know, that sometimes it's, you know, I feel like, okay, the series, I'm going to wait until they're all out and then read them, because once I start one, I want to keep right on going.
And, I'm the same thing. I've got a couple of authors. I'm waiting for that 3rd book. And it got me thinking, when I write now, from now on, I'm really thinking in trilogies out. So
mm-hmm.
I will probably put out 3 books will have an overall overreaching story arc that kind of goes over all 3 books, but there'll be 3 separate books that will stand alone as far as the love story goes. But then you'll have this overall story arc that will go between all through 3 books.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll write all 3 books before I publish them, and then get them out, try and get them out fast. Boom, boom, boom.
Oh, and not put them out all at the same
not
time.
Not put them all at the same time, but one right after that. That was my goal with the new series, the Z-Force series, originally the plan was to publish January, March, and May, the first 3 books. But I got behind. Thank goodness my editor was really good about just give it to me when you can.
Yeah.
So it ended up, and they pushed my release of Z-Bot to December. And so, but I was still trying to stay on the timeline for the other 2 books, and I just, life got in the way, and you know how that happens.
Yep.
And so, it pushed Phase 2, I believe that came out in March,
yep,
or April, maybe April, I think. And then Wild just came out last week. It's this week.
This week, while we were here.
While we were here, right, yeah. Wednesday. So,
congratulations.
Thank you. New release. By the time this airs, it might not be a new release. Hopefully it'll be a bestseller by that point.
Yeah, well, I read Z-Bot and Phase and enjoyed both of them, and looking forward to reading Wild.
Wild is a crazy character. He was inspired by first of all, to preface the Z-Force. Z-Force is kind of my tribute to superheroes and the superhero movies. The Avengers, the Justice League, those type of things. So Z-Force is my kind of sexy superheroes. And so I'm taking a lot of inspiration from some of my favorite superheroes, Captain America, Iron Man, Thor, that type of thing. So, but Wild takes his inspiration from Deadpool, who is very well known for breaking the 3rd wall and talking directly to the audience, or in his comic books, talking directly to the reader. And so Wild is my character who does that. He will often break the 3rd wall, the 4th wall, and talk directly to the reader. He believes he is a character in a book, or he knows he's a character in a book. My editor wasn't sure she could spell a hero who was delusional. And I said, well, he's not really delusional. He just knows he's a character in the book.
Mm-hmm.
And so he will also complain about me as the author. He doesn't know the name of the author, but he will complain about his author and on a regular basis and talk directly to the reader. There's one instance where he says to the reader, I don't suppose you could hop ahead a couple of chapters and tell me what's about to happen. Because he knows he's getting into some trouble.
Well, you know, when you play with him in Phase, in the 2nd book.
I do introduce him in the 2nd book.
Yeah.
And it's a lot of fun.
And, you know, and he talks about, you know, the book, and the other characters are kind of confused about, what is he talking about? You know, we don't get right where he's going. But then, as I was reading it, and all of a sudden the light bulb went off. He's going to be in the next book, or in one of the books, and it's like, you know, he is really an interesting character.
It's been really fun. This is the first time as an author that I have had readers come up to me and ask, is Wild going to be the next book, you know, because, and it's been kind of a kick. It's like, yeah, he is.
Yeah.
We need to know his story.
Yeah.
So he's been a lot of fun to play with.
And I did have to ask you who he ended up with, and they don't need to, you know, I don't know if you want to share that.
I don't mind that. He's actually in that little teaser scene at the end.
Mm-hmm.
In the Zyforce, and I think I've also done it in Hearts in Orbit, what I will do in my series books is I will tease the next couple. It's kind of like that in the superhero movies where you get those scenes after the credits that everyone has to stay for in the movies, you know.
Yeah.
Taking my inspiration from that, I've been trying to put little teaser scenes for the next book, so you'll kind of know when you read Faves that at the end of that there's a teaser scene that goes between Wild and Dove, and so they have a relationship already. They were childhood friends who were separated, so...
Well, because she's earlier in the book, too. I mean,
right.
She's in part of Faith,
right.
You know, where you
right.
introduce her there, and that's where I kind of went, I wonder, you
yeah.
know?
Yeah.
So, and then when I got to the end, it was like, yeah, okay, no. Yeah, he's going to end up with her, so...
Yeah, it makes for... It's, for me, this has been one of the most fun series I've ever written, and I think before I go back to Hearts in Orbit, which I know they want me to write the next couple of books in. I'm really being drawn to continue writing Zyforce, so I've already got the next three books plotted out, and the overall story arc kind of in my head, but I don't have a lot of it on paper yet, so after this conference, it's going to be put my nose to the grindstone and really churn those out.
Yeah, I have a feeling that there's about 2,000 authors here, and I have a feeling everybody leaving here is going to be going, now I'm ready to go and get back and hit the, you know.
It's a good way to kind of recharge and get your inspiration back, getting mm-hmm. together with other authors. I find that it really is, being a writer is usually a pretty lonely profession.
Yeah.
So, but when we do get together, we all get each other. We get that voices in our head, characters
mm-hmm.
telling us what to do. And, you know, you get together with other people who really understand the process and what you're doing, and you feed off each other's energy. And so, coming home from this, except for the fact that I would probably sleep all day Monday.
I have my grandkids on Monday, so I'm all
they're going to be...
Yeah, you'd be like, take a nap, or they'll find me sitting on the couch, you know,
yeah,
my head down to my chin down to my chest. You know, and it's funny because you hear a lot about authors and writers, we're basically introverts.
Yes.
But when you get us together, we're all like just talking and chattering, and the sound level, the noise level is just, you know, tremendous. And, and somebody says, well, I'm an introvert, and you're kind of like, well, no, you're not. But take it outside of being with other authors.
And then you have an interview for introverts because we live so much in our heads and with things we can't really share with other people who don't understand the process.
Yeah.
And so that's me. I'm the same way. I tend to be a wallflower. But here talking with you, another author, it's like we're on the same page.
Mm-hmm.
I can open up and that type of thing.
Yeah. And sometimes it's hard to get a shut up.
Yeah. There is that.
I know, I don't know what night it was when we were down with, you know, a couple other authors. I don't think you were there. You might have left. You and Lori might have left. And the next night when I met up with Amy and I said, I apologize for talking so much. Because it was just like, they get it. Like you said, they get it, and they're you know, they want to hear your stories, whereas somebody else, you kind of see their eyes glaze over,
like
what
okay.
are you talking
yeah.
about, you
yeah.
know?
Can we talk about football now?
Yeah. And Lori is a big, Lori, your wife, is a big part, so I think she gets it.
Lori gets it, and Lori is really a lot of the reason that I am that I'm writing romance, that I'm reading romance. It was about, I would say, I've been writing, I was writing fantasy and science fiction, I've been writing that for almost 40 years now.
Mm.
Not published, but writing little stories and that type of thing.
Hundreds of them.
Some that you will never see because they are awful. But, you know, learning the craft and that type of thing. But
mm-hmm.
I think it was about 25 years ago, she handed me Nora Roberts' book, Enchanted, which you never forget your first romance. I'm sorry.
Yep,
just
yep.
don't. And I loved it. And it's like, oh my, this is what I want to write. And it was at that point, it was like I just devoured, you know, Nora Roberts. I discovered Sherilyn Kenyon, some of the other paranormal, and there wasn't a lot of sci-fi romance back then, but there was paranormal, there was with fantasy elements and that type of thing. So the stuff, like what I was writing to a certain extent, but, you know, it was like, okay, but with the romance element, with the happy ever after, which really is what you want from a book, it's what I want from a
right.
book. I don't want a dark ending where everyone dies, you know?
Yeah.
You want
to feel good when you get to the end of a book.
I want that yeah. that payoff at the end, the happy ever after. I want that dark moment. I need to have it look like they're never going to make it.
Mm-hmm.
Because that to me also is a wonderfully crafted book gets you to that dark moment. You think, how in the world? You know it's going to have a happy ending, which is, you know, is what you're looking for. And when you get to that dark moment and you see, you know, you ask yourself, how in the world is she going to pull these two together at that moment? That's the magic of a romance novel.
I know I gave a talk at the library that several of the Wisconsin authors did, and this lady came up and she goes, well, I don't understand why you'd want to read romance because they all have a happy ending. And it's like, it's the journey of the couple, and every book is different.
Absolutely.
You know? And when you were talking about Lori getting you into reading, it's my romance. My brother got me into reading romance.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, there's a story behind that, so should I share it? It's a funny story. This was back in 1975.
Oh my.
Which now is considered a historical era. Oh God, it kills me when I hear that. Stabbed in the heart. I'm like, oh my gosh, I was married and had my children then. But anyway, I was pregnant with my son, and he has five sisters. So why he called me up to say, you have to read this book, it's really, really good. And it was Captain Woodhouse's Flame in the Flower.
Yeah.
And so I went out and I got it. My husband was traveling, and I went out and got it. And of course, stayed up until like 3, 4 o'clock in the morning. And it was like the history combined with the romance. And, you know, so I called him up the next day. I said, you're right, this is really, really good. But why were you reading this book? And he goes, well, he goes, I was in the bathroom a little longer than I anticipated. The only thing to read was his wife's book. So he picked it up, and he just couldn't put it down. So he's the one that got me into reading romance. Still share stories.
I truly believe that if we could remove the stigma from romance, that men would be our biggest new audience. I think, especially today's modern man,
mm-hmm.
is moving into a place where they can get over the macho, you know, and really enjoy a good romance.
Yeah.
Because I think a lot of guys do want that happy ever after, just like the women. Maybe for different reasons, and maybe, you know, to a certain extent, I think I do craft my books, being a man myself, more towards the male perspective. And so if there's any male readers out there that are looking for something, try one of mine, because I tend to have the action, the car chases, you know, all that stuff they think is a guy movie type of thing in my stories. So it's not really, you know, and a happy ending, which is, you know, if that's what you're looking for, you know, maybe I'm writing romance for guys. I don't know, which is why I don't have that many readers. But
well, you know, and sometimes I think romance has a stigma anyway,
oh, yeah.
which we need to get over, because it's like, you know, it's not about sex. It's not about the bodice rippers. I mean, that is so 70s.
Right.
You know, and now it's, I mean, as a reader, you know, and an author, there's times if I'm reading a book, it's like, okay, am I going to get a comment from somebody because of the cover? You know, and it's like that, and that's wrong.
Right.
You know,
right.
It's what's going to be nice about the Kindle.
Oh, yeah.
Nobody knows
what you're reading. They just know that you're reading.
Yeah, and there's so many aspects of romance. I mean, you have the sweet, and you have the inspirational, and you have mysteries, and you have, you know, fallout to the erotic.
Right, right. And you do have the sexy.
Yeah.
Which I write a little speedy.
Yeah.
And that's what I enjoy reading. And so I write what I enjoy reading.
Mm-hmm. And as long as it fits with the story.
Right.
And I've read some where it's like, All right, already. It's not moving the story forward.
I
know.
My wife is famous for skipping my sex scenes. she'll read my books, not all of them even, but she is it. She will pace through, and I always read the sex scenes. Part of it is now I read as an author. And when someone does, when another author does something good, I tear it apart.
Yeah.
It takes me forever to get through a book nowadays because I don't just read it and enjoy it. And I really need to go back to doing that. But, you know, as a newer author, there's techniques and things. It's like, I really enjoyed that. Why did I enjoy that? What did they do to make me enjoy that? Because I want to be able to write like that. Or if I'm reading a bad book, you know, and there are some out there, you know, every once in a while I grab one, a freebie or something like that. It's just not really what I'm looking for what I would call, and I'm not going to call it any authors or anything like that, but what I would call a poorly written book, poorly
mm-hmm.
edited or something. And, you know, what are they doing wrong? You know, and am I doing that? Is someone reading my book that way? So, it makes for, you know, me reading slower, and I even forget now where I was going with this point.
Well, I find myself rewriting as I'm reading. I find myself in my, you know, as I'm reading it going, oh, they should have written it this way.
Yes.
You know, and it does slow down and it does change the way I read a book. And that's exactly what, you know, what you were saying. It's, you know, unless I get one that is so in, you know, it just grabs me and just, you know, and then that's a well-written book.
Yeah.
Where I don't have to, you know, where I don't find myself, not intentionally, but I think it's just kind of in there.
I know where I was going with that point.
Okay.
back to the sex scenes. For the first time, a couple of weeks ago, I was reading a book, and it was an okay book, and I got to the sex scene, and I skipped by it. Because and in my head, I realized that the sex scene didn't need to be there.
Yeah.
You know, and so that was the that was where I was going with that.
Yeah.
Anyway, all the way around.
I was talking. You talked about Lori doesn't need your sex scenes, and when my first book came out, and my daughter read it on Facebook, she goes, "You have to read this book. It's really, really good." I read the love scenes with my eyes closed. Well, her mother is really cool. I do have to admit, when I you know, was reading your books and I got to the love scenes, it's like, this is strange because I know the man who wrote it. You know,
and it's a man who wrote it.
And a man who wrote it, yeah. And I have to admit, it was a little bit different, you know. I mean, they were good, you know, I'm not saying that, but it was just kind of... Because they carried the story forward,
yeah.
You know, it was, you know, and in Faye's it was like, you know, every time something happened, and, you know, and they were like, oh, no, we can't, you know.
I teased those two so badly through the first part of the book that, so they finally did explode.
Oh, well, that, I mean, I loved it when she ended up going down through the ceiling and ended up in bed with them, and I'm like, wait a minute, you know. That was pretty funny. I enjoyed that. Let's talk a little bit about your Son of Thunder, because you write, not only do you write the sci-fi, but you also have a series with the
The Heavenly Wars.
With the gods.
My Heavenly Wars series is based on mythology, specifically Norse mythology, though I do bring in the Greek. I bring in every facet of mythology, and the premise of it is that the gods that have gone mythical want their power back. They have no power because no one believes in them anymore.
Mm.
And so some of them, what I call the coalition of evil gods, have decided to try and take their power back, and the other gods want to stay mythical because they have more freedom. Now that they're mythical, because they needed the people to believe in them, you know, but the people who believed in them also controlled them. All of these myths were made up. And it wasn't the gods that created people, it was the people that created the gods. And so as people created all these stories, at one point, one of my gods is known as from the Norse mythology, in one of the myths he lost his hand. And so, he's the hero in Daughter of Darkness. Well, he lost his hand until he became mythical, and then he was able to get his hand back, because there is still magic in the gods, and they still have power, they just don't have as much power. And so this whole war is going on in heaven, and it Earthlings involved, because the one place all the different mythical heavens, I use Asgard, and the Greeks are up in Mount Olympus, and there's different, I've done the research and I've forgotten enough because I wrote this so long ago. All the different pantheons have their own different places, but they all touch Earth. And so mortals can get involved in this heavenly war that's going on. And in fact, everything flows through Earth as things go on. And so that's the premise of it. The first book, Son of Thunder, is the son of Thor, Jord Thorsson. And I did a lot of, I am Scandinavian, so I had a lot of Norse mythology. I grew up on Norse mythology rather than the classical Greek mythology, which a lot more people do. And so I loved the Norse pantheon, and I knew it pretty well. And so I created, after the gods went mythical, Thor and Sif had another son, because in mythology they have two sons and a daughter. But this is the baby of the family. And he happens to live down on Earth as a mortal, he's a professor in a university who teaches mythology and religions and that type of thing. My heroine is a museum curator who happens across an old Norse artifact, which is Thor's belt from Norse mythology, because Thor has been missing as part of this war. And Jord is down on Earth actually pretending to be a mortal looking for his father in this war. And so that's what starts the whole series off. And these two meet because Megan gets this belt of Thor, which gives Thor a lot of power. And the belt is actually a character in the book all of its own. And it wraps around her, giving her Thor's strength. And so she becomes almost godlike, and then joins, and because he can't get his father's belt back, Jord is kind of forced with her to go on this great adventure. And we had a lot of fun with that.
You put a lot of humor in this story. I mean, I didn't say a lot of humor, but clever writing. You make your characters likable. They're not, I don't know how I want to say it. They're not so serious.
I do like humor.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, in my Soulmate Tree book, Between Venus and Mars, I actually set out to make that a science fiction romantic comedy.
Mm-hmm.
And so I amped up the humor in that book specifically. But the more I've written humor in, the more my readers seem to like it.
Yeah.
So,
I enjoy that. And humor is not always easy to write. It can be. I think it's hard to write if you set out to write it. You know what I'm saying? And
uh-huh.
I think it, like in my writing, it's just, there's times it's like it just happens. It's not like, okay, I need to put a comedic scene in here or something like that. I think it seems a little more natural that way.
Well, I'm a huge fan of rom-coms, movies, as well as romantic comedies, novels that have humor in them. I think the trick is the situations. You have to continually put your characters into crazy situations.
Yep.
And
figure out how to get them out.
And a lot of my characters have really good senses of humor anyway.
Mm-hmm.
I think but that's kind of it might be a part of my personality that I put into them, because I like to think I'm not so much funny, but I have a good sense of humor.
Mm-hmm. We those of us at the convention, we have our little name tag things, and then we were able to put on these little ribbons telling us, you know, if you are, what you write, you know, teen, sci-fi, contemporary, historical, whatever, and then two of them were cancer and plotter. And it's interesting as you walk around to see if there's a plotter, there's a cancer. I've actually seen a lot, it seems like I've seen a lot more cancer. But you have cancer on yours.
I am 100% cancer. When I start a novel, usually I have some concept of a situation. It's basically I find my hero, my heroine, and a situation. And then I rely on my characters to get themselves out.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's, when I'm writing, they're talking to me. And if you're not an author, you may not even understand what I'm, or you may think I'm crazy, or I may be crazy, I will accept that. But my characters do talk to me, and so many times, I put them in these situations. Son of Thunder, for example, started simply with my brain coming up with Yorg, Thor's son, riding a motorcycle up the Rainbow Bridge to Asgard. And that scene was my situation. And then it was like, okay, how do I get to that scene? And so I knew him. I knew he was, you know, who is she? And why is she involved with him, you know? And that's where the whole thing sprang from. And then I just, you know, I had to move back to figure out how I was going to get to there. And when I got to that scene, then I had to go, okay, where are we going? By that point, I had a plot. But I didn't plot it all out ahead of time. By I would say about a third of the book, I know the ending that I'm aiming for, but I have no idea how to
get there
yet until I write it.
And I guess, you know, maybe if you're a plotter, you're more analytical. Because I'm a pantser. I'm the same way. You know, like in one of my books, all of a sudden, the heroine got abducted, came out of the blue. And I remember sending a message to my TA, and I'm like, oh my gosh, you got abducted. Now what do I do? You know, how do I get her out of that? And that, to me, that's the fun part. You know, I know somebody who, her books are so plotted out that she can write chapter 5 before chapter 2, the ending before the, and I'm like, but what if your characters don't want to do that? You know,
and
I don't,
so many times I realize when I hit writer's block or I hit that wall, it's because I'm trying to force my characters to do something they don't
want to do.
And I have to pull back to the point that they can take me in a different direction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I had one where I was working on, and I was like, it was a short story, and it wasn't going anywhere, and I was getting so frustrated. And it was a couple, and I was writing under my pen name, and I was sitting on the back deck, and it was like they screamed at me what they wanted. I mean, it was just like they both of them, one in one ear and one in the other. And as soon as it was like, oh, boom, the story just went and then turned into a book, you know. But it was like, the same thing, you know. And then you get frustrated, you know, because you're trying to make them do something they don't want to do.
I have a situation, and I won't say what book it is because it gives something away. But I had a situation where I was trying to present a new minor character who I thought would be my heroine in the next book. It was early in the book. And so I presented her, I was writing right along, and all of a sudden she became the main villain of the book. She literally turned from this sweet little thing into a monster. And I had no control over that. I mean, she was a monster. She is a monster. But is she still alive?
I kill her.
I can't remember.
Well, and I had just the opposite, where I had a character where he was going to be the bad guy. He was a nasty man. He was a womanizer. And then all of a sudden he was like, he started turning. I mean, I'm like, wait a minute. He's a nice guy. Now what do I do? You know? Okay, so he was going to be a character in, you know, in another book, but it was just kind of like, he didn't want to be a bad guy.
No,
you know,
no.
He didn't want to be nasty. And deep inside, he was a nice, warm, caring teddy bear. You know, but I was like, what?
Well, and I think that comes with, as you write, especially your minor characters, you still have to know their motivations and where they're going,
mm-hmm.
you know, and who they are inside. even though sometimes outside, you know, if they're not acting that way, why are they not acting that way? How does it work in your plot?
Mm-hmm.
So you've got all of these voices in your head, all of these characters. It's, you know, so that tends to drive, to me, it makes the story more interesting because I don't even know what it's going to be as I'm writing it.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get to the editing stage and it's like, okay, you know, and they still talk to you through that, at least with me, that my characters still talk to me through the editing stage and giving me, you know, I didn't really need to do that. I could have done this, and we could still get there by going this way, you know. And so pathways open up that could maybe change the book and still get it to the end of that happy ever after that you're aiming for. And so then I'll play around with it for a couple of days, and sometimes I'll go write something else. If I hit that wall, it's nice to go write something else. My mind will still be working on that plot line.
Mm-hmm. I'll get up and walk away and do something else, and it's like I'll be making supper, and all of a sudden it's like you know, and I put down what I'm doing, turn off the stove, and run over and, you know, and type it in or write it down or something, because I don't want to lose it. But
right.
I think you step back and your mind, you know, your subconscious just kind of relaxes, and then all of a sudden here we are.
But I think that's the introverts in authors. It's not really that we don't communicate well with the general public. It's that we're always working on a story in our head. And a lot of times, all of a sudden, the story becomes really important and we withdraw from the real world. At least I do. And my wife will see the glaze in my eyes. She'll be talking to me and all of a sudden just like, you're not even here, are you? Sorry.
That could be a man thing. I'm sorry.
It could be a man thing. Yes, it could very well be a man. Because we can only, and I'm speaking for my gender here, but I really believe most men do one thing at a time.
Well, my husband's admitted that. And women's brains are like, we are.
You guys can multitask like nobody's doing.
Yeah, all over the place.
Yeah.
I know there's times where I'll say something and my husband will go, what? I'm like, oh, but the characters. And he go, oh, okay. And he goes, that's what he's doing. Because he gets it now, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think he tries to get it. But
unless you write, you really don't understand completely. I think my wife has accepted a lot of this stuff. I don't know that she completely understands it. Thank God she's very understanding of me. And so that is, that's the wonderfulness of it. I now can drag myself back into the real world if I need to, a little better than when I was first writing, because my stories would consume me. And I really did get antisocial. When I was writing Son of Thunder, it was like, don't bother me. Don't, you know, I just wanna, this story completely consumed me. Now I can be writing, I can be in the middle of a paragraph, and if something comes up, the story stays in my head, I can get up, I can go do something, I can come back and get back to where I was. If I got torn out of my story early on, and I think that's part of maturing as an author too, because if you're always in that, you lose real life. I mean, there's so much things in real life, things like things with my kids and my family, you know, you've got all that other stuff, and at, you know, at one point a job, I'm lucky enough I don't have to do that anymore because this is my job.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, to pull myself out, it was really hard to get back to that place where I could write. Now, it's like integrated into my lifestyle, so I can pull myself away and get back into it a lot faster. But that took a lot of training and a lot of just doing it, I think.
Yeah. It'd be interesting to talk to, you know, both of us where we are at with our careers, to sit down and talk to someone who is at, you know, the beginning of their career, to see if they are doing it the way, you know. You know, and it's interesting here, my roommate, she's, you know, she's looking for an agent, she's looking for editors, and she's, you know, trying to get in as many workshops as she possibly can to learn everything she possibly can. And I remember being there, you know, and just going, if I don't go to this one, I'm not going to learn this one. And it's actually kind of nice coming here this time and going, you know, I want to go to this one, but, oh, it's going to be taped. So, you know.
Right. I can pick it up later, or, you know, it's not something I haven't seen someplace else and have an idea of what they're going to say.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we went to, Lori and I are going to a lot of the workshops on marketing,
uh-huh.
not so much the writing structure and that type of thing, because I've kind of got that down.
Yeah.
And so the stuff you're learning early in your career about the craft part of it, once you've got that down, it does change to a certain extent. It's good to always get a, you know, to have a refresher.
And you always learn something.
You always learn something on everything, but we're really aiming more this time on marketing and networking and having some fun.
Yeah. I know one of the things that crossed my mind is, you know, we're not young. We're not old, but we're not young. And I know when I first started writing my history books 20 years ago, I could stay up till midnight, 1 o'clock in the morning and write. And now it's like, you know, and I could tell us, I think it was each decade, it was like, okay, now it's 9, now it's, okay, 5:30, I'm done. You know, because I think the brain just stops or whatever.
Yeah.
Or I'm giving myself the permission to say, I don't need to be writing all the time. Because
mm-hmm.
you're at home, it's always there. When you have a job, you go home, you leave the job at work.
Right.
And since it's always there, you always feel like you should be working.
Right.
You find
I don't take weekends off. I don't.
Yeah.
You know, I write almost every day. Now, here during the convention, I haven't written a word, but when I get home next week, it's basically the first thing I do in the morning is turn on my computer, and often before I even get dressed, you know, I'm pecking away at the keyboard, or going through email or doing office stuff.
Office stuff,
There's, you know, office stuff that's in here.
Author awful stuff.
All we want to do is write.
Right, yeah.
And you talk about getting older, and I'm, of course, getting older as well, and one of the great fears I have is that I will die with characters that never got on the page.
Yeah.
And those characters scream at me constantly, you haven't written my book yet.
Well, then you should tell them, make sure I stay alive.
That's
the battle they have to
fight. There are times like those mornings I wake up with hangovers like this morning that, you know, that's what's keeping me going. You can't die. Character's the right.
Yeah. I know, and I've had moments where it's like, why am I doing this? You know, you feel like you're fighting an uphill battle with the way the author world is going and all the things that are happening and stuff. And I've had moments where I'm like, oh, why am I putting myself through this? And then it's like, you talk about the characters, like, well, then there's this story, and then there's this story, and then there's that one, and I've got it, you know, and they'll be gone.
Even if I didn't sell a book, I would still be writing.
Yeah.
Because I can't not write those stories down.
And that's a lot of authors say.
Yeah.
You know, I can't not write.
It's there's a progression. You talk about the progression of the authors. When I first started out, of course, my first goal was to write a book, you know,
mm-hmm.
and then once I had that goal, the next goal was to get that published, you know, and right about the time I had that, I was at that point, the self-publishing thing came along, and so I self-published it, and it wasn't a great book, it isn't a great book, it's still out there on Amazon, and I'm going to tell you the name of it, because it's a piece of crap, don't buy it, and I'm going to call it S.C. Mitchell, and, I actually self-published four books before I hooked up with Soulmate and discovered the importance of having an editor.
Mm-hmm.
And, at that point, you know, we talk about all the noise in the writing world and that type of thing. I was part of that noise, you know, and I realized that. And my books are out there, like I say. Every once in a while I sell one, so it's really hard to just pull them off of Amazon. But if you're going to start reading me at the earliest, please start with Son of Thunder and not with Sleeping Star.
You just named it.
I know. but you tell me to go out and buy it now.
There you go. I want to go buy this perfectly horrible book.
Yeah.
Well, then they'll get to see how much you've improved as a writer.
Well, that's true, because it is a superhero book.
Okay.
And so it's kind of a bookend to my first book was a superhero book, and now my latest stuff is a superhero series. So it does kind of bookend my career as far as that goes. But yeah, it needs to go at some point. I probably will be pulling it before the end of the year. And my other self-pub stuff too. I love the story in the Demons Rising series, but here again, that was not well edited. I had some good critique partners that went over it, but there's errors and things like that in those books, and they need to go. But I think at some point I would like to rewrite those and get them properly edited and back out there, because I like that series as well.
You'll probably go back and go, oh, gosh.
I haven't read them in
that.
Years.
Yeah. I know my first book that was published, it's like, even though it was published and stuff, it's like, I really don't want to go back and read it,
yeah.
You know, because I'll see things that I would have written differently now.
Oh.
Although, you know, Soulmate liked it and they published it,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, and
mm-hmm.
everything. And
are you talking about writing for love?
I am.
Oh, that's a good book.
Oh.
You got nothing to be worried about there.
Thank
I love
you.
That book.
You know, it's interesting when we talk about Soulmate Publishing, because we were talking about this last night, that we probably were like maybe the 14th and 15th or something like that authors
right.
that they signed on. They were very, very new. And we've seen the growth in Soulmate Publishing too.
Right.
It's been
right.
fun to watch.
As a publisher, they have been so good. I've heard so many horror stories from other authors with different publishers. Publishers that go out of business.
Mm-hmm.
Publishers that don't pay the royalties. That But Soulmate has been so good to us.
Yeah.
That yes, if given the opportunity, would I sign with one of the big five publishers, you know, out of New York and get one of those mass market paperbacks sitting in Barnes and Noble
yeah.
on the bookshelf?
Or Walmart. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh yeah, absolutely. I would go there. And it is, when I was talking about the goals of getting published, you know, and that type of thing, it is a goal of mine to have that mass market paperback sitting on the bookshelf at Walmart. It would be wonderful. You should always increase your goals as an author. But I could not ask for a more nurturing publisher and a better group of the author group.
Yeah.
Are so supportive. If you're a young author and you're looking for a publisher, please check them out.
Yeah.
They're so supportive.
Yeah. Each time I go through edits, I feel like I've learned something mm-hmm. else. And I know when I got my first edits for Writing for Love, I'm like, why did they want to publish this book? I'm like, oh my gosh, but they just make it a better book.
Yeah.
You know, and that makes
for yeah. the right editor
yeah.
Makes all the difference in the world.
Yeah.
I have to mention that Zubat, my current in my current series, the first book in the Zyphor series is up for an award.
That's right, I'm gonna bring that up. I know the Prism Award.
The Prism Award. And it would never have reached that phase, you know, that level without my editor, Cheryl Yeko, who is an awesome author in her own right.
Yes. Both her and Shari Chapin.
Yes. And are both, you know, is a great editor. She's been with me now through, I think it's 8 or 9 books. And so we kind of know each other's style and that type
mm-hmm.
of thing. But the book would never be as good, you know, Zubat would never be as good as it was without Cheryl's input. Getting that through Soulmate was the boost in my career. I'm hoping that the Prism Awards, whether I win or not tonight, has also, because I've also finaled in the National Excellence in Romance Fiction Award contest and the Toronto Northern Hearts contest. So Zubat is a finalist in 3 contests right now. I received word that I didn't win the NERFA, the National Excellence, but I was one of the top 3.
But that's, I mean, that is That's good.
And on the same day that I learned that I hadn't won that one, I learned that I had finaled in the Northern Hearts.
Okay.
And so, and there's a couple contests still out there for this year that G-Bot's in that I'm keeping my fingers crossed for.
And that feeling when you win a contest is like, oh, and I, you know, when the Trail to Love
yes.
took first place in a contest. And, oh, my God, I couldn't breathe. I swear I was hyperventilating. And I called Adam. I called my husband, Al, up. And I'm like, oh, my gosh, my goodness, what happened? What's wrong? Oh, no, it's good. But I couldn't talk. It was just like, and then I had to go somewhere. And I'm like, I should not be driving. Because I was just
so
like,
excited.
Oh, my gosh. It was just
yeah.
the best feeling. I hope you win.
Well, I do, too.
You know, and when you do, I'm going to do a little, you know, thing at the end of this.
Okay.
And, you know, or put on, if I can type stuff in there, award-winning, you know.
Well, and Cheryl told me last night, she said she can't wait to put award-winning author all over my book covers if I win.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
So hopefully.
Yeah,
hopefully.
That's one of the first things I did was had some, like, covers of books that were coming out, award-winning author.
I'm up against some stiff competition. I believe one of them is even a New York Times best-selling author. So.
That's
it's book for book, so
yeah.
We'll see.
Yeah. You'll win. I'm confident you'll win. I'm hoping, you know, we're going to be back to cheering you on. So.
I'm trying so hard not to get my hopes up too high.
You know,
that's the excitement and the problem with an awards ceremony. It's very public and, you know, and just getting to where I am in you know, have gotten in this contest because it's a national contest.
Mm-hmm.
So to be at that it made me feel, it gave me some
validation.
Yes. Thank you. You're awesome. You have words.
There's a thing called review at the start of the
show. But it gave me validation. This year has given me validation for the last 40 that I've been writing. You
mm-hmm.
know, that I've reached a different level, I feel. As an author, and I'm ready to take some of those next steps. And there's always, you know, you can always do better. You can always,
yeah.
And I could always do better. I know that. Hopefully what's coming in the future is going to be amazing. I've got some plots in my head. I've got a book right now that is not a romance, but it's a high fantasy. That I wrote a long time ago. I wrote about a long time ago, probably 10, 15 years ago. But I've been working on this novel. This is a novel that I feel is really good. The story is really good. Now I have to make the writing really good in it. And the problem is that my hero dies in the end. And so it's not a happy ever after, but it is not a romance. He will, and I shouldn't give this away, he will come back in the next book as the bad guy, actually. And then in the third book, they redeem him, and they do get their happy ever after, but not for the third book. So
it's a fiction with romantic elements?
It could be considered romantic elements.
Because it's not even a happy for now.
No, it's a bittersweet ending.
Okay.
And that's all I'll give of that because the book isn't even. That's the one I'm going to try and sell to either an agent, or to get into the Big Five, and
mm-hmm.
maybe that'll be my mass market book sitting on the shelf in Walmart. you know, and if not that one, then the next one. I've got five that are up here that I have to suppress because I've got to get books in my current series done. But as an author, I also want to have that book in case, you know, the book that's free, because now I've got four different series, if I look at it that way, three really, Heavenly Wars, Hearts in Orbit, and The Zyphorus, that will all need feeding over time. But then I also need that new project that I can pitch, that I can, you know, that I can use to move up my stature. So it's going to be a busy fall.
Yeah, we were talking about that last night.
Yeah.
About how, you know, when this book is done and comes out and I get it set up
the order of what books I want next to come out.
Right.
Because it's always the next book. And I mentioned that to my roommate, because she did Pitch to an Agent, and I did Ask for the Folds. I'm really excited for her. And I said, you know, make sure you have in mind that you can talk about the next book, because they want to know that you're not just a one book wonder.
Right.
You know, they want to know that you have more in the works.
Mm-hmm.
And so that is a question. Okay, well, what else are you working on, or what else do you have? So
right, especially an agent wants to know that they're not going to make their money off of you for one book.
Yeah.
Unless you're Stephen King.
Yeah.
But
and I do have to say, because I think we're going to have to...
Oh, we get...
Yeah.
I know, we get stabbing.
A half hour is almost an hour now, so...
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. But I do have to tell you, and I know this can make you feel good, and this is the honest to God truth, is I was reading the Z-Bot and then Faze. It was like a movie running through my mind as I was reading it. You know, it was... I could picture it as a movie. So if there's any movie guys out there, you might want to.
Oh, I would. Well, if you're looking for a superhero movie, they tend to be big right now.
Mm-hmm.
I do have the movie rights. That's another thing that's nice about Soulmate is we retain our movie rights,
yeah,
as well as our audio rights.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't pursued the audiobooks. In fact, that's what I'm going to do next, right after this, is there's a company that will help you get the audio book out. So we're going to go look at that in about 15 minutes. But
it's noon?
Is it noon? We've been talking that long? No. Your computer is not all right. You're so
loud. Yeah, my computer did not change time. I'm
right.
Like, wait a minute.
Right.
What
my
happened?
Computer hasn't either.
You should be in line for the luncheon.
Yeah.
It's just noon.
Yeah.
We're having this luncheon speaker.
Right.
We've had some wonderful speakers. We went to the Rita's last night, and just the... talk about being up for an award, and the Rita's is like the Oscars of romance writing, and, someday I'd like to be able to sit there and have that feeling of when they play that drum, the timpani's going, and the winner is, they're opening up the envelope, and some of the winners were crying and could hardly speak, and some really sweet, and what I thought was really, really cool was yesterday for the Golden Heart, and that's for unpublished authors. And one of the women who won, how old do you think she was? 70s?
70,
maybe,
yeah.
Close to 80?
Yeah.
And it was like, it's never too late. Never too late. So don't give up on your unpublished dreams.
No.
So
no, it's not.
On that note, thank you so much.
Thank you
for being part of this. So, yeah, this is going to be a long one, but I think we had a really good discussion, and covered a lot of bases, and since this is going to be what do they call it? I want to say iPod. whatever.
Recorded.
Yeah, recorded. Message. Whatever. Right now, I don't know who my next guest will be after. I can edit some of this stuff out.
Okay.
But until we meet again, read on, my lovelies. Thank you, Sue.
Thank you. Oh.